Sonny, you know, Hogan Gidley here is, what would you call him? You're a pundit, right? Isn't that right, Hogan? Are you? Sure. Would you call yourself a pundit?
Sure.
Yeah. He was, you just got from
there's a better, from, I'm sure there's a better way to describe that.
How about insightful political analyst? How about that?
Oh,
senior communications strategist. How about
so
that?
Hogan yeah. just got back from Tuscaloosa, where he was for the most recent Republican debate as a incisive political commentator for News Nation, right, Hogan?
That's correct.
Yeah. So we'll get to that, talk about the most recent Republican debate, get Hogan's bird's eye view and in-person view of it, because this is the Line Drive Podcast. And I'm Tim Murtaugh, but first we should say you should like and subscribe and follow all the things, do all the things on this podcast. And then I will get to, but first we should talk about the idea that Hunter Biden has been indicted. That's kind of big news over the last 12, 24 hours or so. A lot of the conservative media, the mainstream media, I mean, it's undeniably news, but the conservative media is jumping all over this. Hogan, what do you make of this? What's your initial?
Listen, great. You're holding someone accountable who broke the law. Big deal. Okay. You knew about this for 5 years. It took a Republican House to bring this stuff to the public in 5 months. Some of the worst egregious offenses by Hunter Biden are outside the statute of limitations. So he's not even really going to get in trouble for some of the worst things he's done. On top of that, the media and the left is going to say, why do they keep harassing this poor, clearly troubled individual who was on drugs, who was trying to make ends meet? Forget the fact he was spending $600,000 on hookers and women and cars while he's saying he can't or won't pay paternity leave for his child he had out of wedlock with another stripper. Forget all that for a moment. Here's the question that, for whatever reason, the press won't ask, and it infuriates me to no end. And maybe they'll start. You can't pay taxes. You don't have to pay taxes on money you don't have. He had the money. Where did he get it from? What did he do to get the money?
Was he selling candy?
Blows my mind. That's the issue. Where did you get the money from? China, Russia, Romania, Uzbekistan, whatever, Ukraine, whatever. You got it. How did you get it? What did you do to get it? Was there any discernible deliverable? And if I get asked one more time.
Oh, there was a deliverable. There was a deliverable.
There was a deliverable, yeah. But
we all know what it was.
Right, but no expertise on oil and gas for Burisma, for example. But if I get asked one more time how this differs from Jared Kushner and Ivanka, both of whom were millionaire business people in their own right before they, you know, before Jared even met Donald Trump, who started businesses, developed land, developed businesses, created businesses. Hunter was a crackhead. Those two things are completely different. So forgive me for starting off hot here. It just infuriates me on so many levels.
Yeah, I can tell that. Not that you have a firm opinion on the issue one way or the other, of course. And look, I want to make clear, I've said an awful lot of things about Hunter Biden over the course of the last few years, and it is always centered on what I believe is the corruption and the idea that he is selling access to his father in order to enrich himself and his family and the president of the United States' connection to that. I've never gone after Hunter for anything involving being addicted to substances, because I, like millions of other people, have been touched by that same thing.
Sure,
but it's the corruption, and you know, here we have. Look, Sonny, have you seen some of the things? This is from the Department of Justice. By the way, these are charges that this is the stuff that they were when he had that sweetheart plea deal over the original stuff that got nixed because it was such an outrageously blanket get out of jail free card. Mm-hmm. This was the stuff that the DOJ was going to let go. This was what they negotiated away, these charges. So now they're back. Now they're back. So you mentioned, you have to read some between the lines here for some of these category headers. This is actually This is from the Department of Justice. The category for this one is payments-various women. And over the course,
that's a lot of money to various women.
Well, hold on. Between 2016 and 2019, various women, a total of $683,000. And then there's another category down here that's called adult entertainment. So, what's the difference?
I might be a little naive, but I was just about to say, what is the difference?
I don't know. But that's $188,000. So whatever that is, what adult entertainment is a lot cheaper than payments to various women, whatever that is.
Someone said today he spent $27,000 on a porn site.
Wow.
Just $27,000.
Building the porn site or as a customer?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what's intended. I'm not a member to porn site. Like, maybe that's one membership for a day. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, seems like a lot of money to me, but I may be wrong.
It does sound like a lot of money.
Can I hit on what Hogan was talking about earlier with?
Yeah, good.
He's spending this much money on women and fun and, you know, whatever else. But he's not paying child support.
Yeah. Right. He was in court trying to fight child support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, not paying taxes on any of this.
And trying to stop his child from taking his last name. Right.
Yeah. That too. Yeah.
Which he succeeded in.
Yeah.
That whole part of this to me just, I mean, it hurts my feelings for this little girl because, I mean, I have a personal story with things like that with parental things without getting into too much detail. So it hurts my feelings for this little girl a lot to see, you know, she has to see her biological dad on TV and on news headlines and her grandpa is the president of the United States, but they can't even acknowledge her existence. And that just breaks my heart for her.
Yeah. It took Maureen Dowd to shame Joe Biden into actually acknowledging that he's got that extra grandchild.
Hey, he's such a good Catholic. Don't you forget.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great Catholic man.
Such a super guy. And he was a truck driver at one time. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a million miler on
Amtrak. Here's another one. ATM or cash withdrawals. So over the course of these 4 years, 2016, 17, 18, and 19, cash withdrawals and ATM withdrawals, $1.6 million in cash.
Wow.
What are you doing with all that? First of all, he must have gone to the teller and withdrawn this money because you can't get that much money out of an ATM. You'd be withdrawing money all hours of the day. There's a limit, right? We can hear you typing, I think.
Yeah, you're typing, Sonny.
Sorry.
That's right. Who needs that much walking around money? What are you doing with $1.6 million in cash?
I mean, I don't know that hookers take credit, so I don't know. Maybe it's he's got to pay him in cash. I don't know. Like, it just all seems again untrackable, right? If you're paying cash, it,
I don't know. Well, let's ask. Sonny, do hookers take credit cards? Do you know that?
They might have, you know, the little the square thing that you can plug into your phone. That is a new.
Oh, that thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the correct answer, Sonny, is how am I supposed to know that?
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for you to do too. You're like, Sonny's like, let me tell you all the way. Yes. First of all, you know, the tap pay is really good. You can do the,
So look, all this stuff is really salacious and it's amusing to look at all these dollar amounts that he spent tax-free evidently until now. Over the course of these 4 years, some of the stuff he's never going to get charged with because DOJ dragged its feet so long that the statute of limitations expired. So there's a couple prior years here, tax money that he's going to get off. He's getting away with that. But while this is really entertaining and love to talk about it and all that, what for me, this is like the sideshow. When the lefties on Twitter say, oh, right, I'll make sure never to vote for Hunter Biden for president, you know, making the point of, so what? He's not the president. Who cares? What my concern has always been, and you too, I know, both see things this way, is the connection between Joe Biden and this money. Joe Biden is basically the source of all this money because he's the product that Hunter sold to get all this money coming in. And then there, as I have said before, there is zero chance, no chance in the world that Joe Biden and what we know about him would see people around him getting rich off of his name and not get a taste of it. No chance.
No way.
So, you know, that's why I care about this.
That's a point I love that you made weeks ago when we were doing a podcast. But someone else made a point this morning to me when I was on another show, works at the Federalist. Ben, I think is his name, Benjamin. And he was pointing out something. You're concerned about Trump being compromised because he had businesses all over the world. You're telling me the foreign governments that gave Hunter Biden money, who they knew had drug issues, who they knew had issues with prostitutes and other things, they knew that when they gave him the money. You want to talk about a compromising situation where, like, Joe Biden would have known that too, okay? So what did they have where they're like, yeah, because it's not responsible to give $20 million to a family through the guy who is known to blow through it in a month on hookers, crack, and cars, right? So they knew that. They knowingly gave money to him because they knew they would have leverage, it seems to me. Now, I'm making a leap here, so don't come at me, Twitter or wherever. But, like, understand that. You don't give money to someone you know is going to flit it all away unless you're assured of not just some return on that investment in some form or fashion through influence with Joe, but you also know if you need it and you need to pull on that lever, right, pull on that string to get the guy who has all these horrible personal problems to do something for you, you can do that too.
And you know what? What follows directly from that, Hogan, that's an excellent point. If you have influence over and you have something on the son of the president, if you have blackmail leverage against the son of the president, you have that same leverage against the president.
Yeah.
If you have the power over one of his children, you've got power over him too.
That's
because
the point.
We all know they make a big deal out of how much Joe Biden loves his family. If you've got a member of his family in the vice and can squeeze it at any time you want, you've got Joe Biden in the vice too.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, what do you think happens here? So he's getting indicted. What's the end game here? I know. Yeah. Hogan's saying nothing. That's my thought process too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He's going to get some kind of, if they indicted him on these things, it means he's going to be convicted of it or eventually plead guilty to it or something. And so there will be some punishment of some kind. I doubt very seriously. If it comes down to that, his father will pardon him. Joe Biden will not let his only remaining son go to federal prison.
He will pardon him before
it ever gets to that.
But this is
a smokescreen. Again, my concern is, where's Joe Biden and his involvement in all of this? And this will let the Biden DOJ and all the Democrats say, see that there aren't two tiers of justice. We're prosecuting the president's son. You're prosecuting him. So you do not have to prosecute Biden or investigate Biden.
It makes it where he doesn't have to testify. In front of Congress, he can claim he's under indictment, can't do it. But it goes back to what I said politically, Tim. There are three political topics, issues that should be off the table in this upcoming election, or at the very least, Republicans should use against the left. I don't want to hear a word from Joe Biden about white privilege. I don't want to hear a word from Joe Biden about gun control. And I damn sure don't want to hear a word about Joe Biden regarding paying your fair share in taxes. His son didn't do that. My language here, but give me a break. I'm sorry.
His family.
He had a gun. He treated it like it was a toy, which is ridiculous. Yeah. He obviously didn't pay his taxes. And you're telling me anyone else in this position hasn't already been arrested, hasn't already done jail time. And this guy's skirted for 5+ years in this situation where they covered for him. And Hunter says, I don't want to go speak in front of Congress unless they do it my way, unless it's public first, right? Because he's going to go testify. And Comer rightly said, wait a minute. You have lived your life where the rules don't apply to you. They're going to apply to you here. You do it privately, we'll release the transcript, and then you do it publicly. We're not doing it your way. I mean, you get every break in the book from law enforcement, from the DOJ, from the FBI. You don't have to follow any of those rules, no rules of life, of morality, with your own illegitimate child. So I'm sorry, spare me. You're going to do it the way they want it done. And now I think he has an out where he doesn't have to testify at all, which is sad. So again, I don't want to be weird, but isn't that odd that all of a sudden he gets indicted after the subpoena, after he has to go before Congress, which is no picnic, don't get me wrong, but he could use that not to testify. Forgive me for calling this connected in some way, but you know, I'm putting on my tinfoil. I need to make a tinfoil hat and put it on for the rest of the interview.
Yeah, the indictment is a clear way out of him testifying before Congress.
Yeah.
You know, obvious. Yeah.
Fired up today, Tim.
Yeah, but how do you think, you know, we talked, or Tim talked about a little bit, the media element of this whole thing with, you know, are they going to be held accountable? Likely not. No. But how does this play into the election coming up? Will voters remember this far removed from the election? We're over less than a year from the election, but I hope this stays fresh in voters' minds as we approach the upcoming pick of a new
president. Yeah, look, the key to this to me is that this is not Joe Biden, this is Hunter Biden. You still have to make the leap. And I know that the Republicans in the House Oversight Committee, they are trying and they're coming out with new and more information kind of week by week. And there are some financial links. And you know, we go back to what we learned in the laptop, mm-hmm. which everyone wanted to doubt in the first place. And we know that they had access, Joe and Hunter had access to the same bank accounts. They commingled their funds. You know, if money went into Hunter's bank account, Joe had access to that. You know, and it is interesting. We've talked about this before with the gun charge. And now, like you just said, Hogan, with the evasion of taxes, we finally found two cases, one a gun crime and another one a rich guy avoiding paying taxes. These are the first cases of their kind in history.
Yeah.
That Democrats don't care about. They don't care about this.
Great point.
One gun crime the first ever gun crime that they don't care about. And the first time a rich guy has gotten out of paying his taxes, and they don't care about that either.
Also, the in the White House, I don't know who asked the question, but I love the way they phrased it to Joe Biden when they said, why were you so involved with Hunter's business partners, right? Dinners, phone calls. Why were you golf outings, all these things? And Joe Biden literally said again, that's a lie. That's a lie. And just walked off.
It's a question.
There's a picture of you playing golf with them, you clown. What do you mean that's a lie?
Everybody knows you had dinner at Hogan's favorite restaurants.
Well, it's a Cafe Milano with them and had dinner. You called into their meetings multiple times. What are you talking about?
Everyone knows Hogan Gidley has a standing reservation at Cafe Milano. You can't just go in there.
You will find me there on a Friday night, every Friday night. No, I'm kidding. Long since I've been to Cafe Milano. It used to be the spot to go to.
I know. It's a great place. Gary Kobe took me there. My first time I ever went there. Gary Kobe.
Oh, how nice.
Yes.
Gary never took me there.
Yeah. Well,
I've never been there actually.
Maybe I've been there a few times. Gary's the one that took me there first.
Yeah. Yeah, they got good food. It's a good experience. Mm-hmm.
I saw Greta Van Susteren in there when I stopped and talked to her. She's one great. Day when I was there. She's a nice lady. Yeah.
By the way, I saw Geraldo at the debate.
Yeah, so I was just about to change the topic. So I think we've exhausted Hunter.
That's fine.
Again, oh, I know. There's more. One day, there'll be more coming soon. Republican debate this week, the number four. This one in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Hunter, you were there. Hunter. I'm so sorry. Sorry.
It's probably the worst mess up you could ever have.
Hogan Gidley, the guy who goes to the gym at 4 a.m. every morning, not exactly the same kind of lifestyle. So you were there, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, for the big number four debate as a guest and a commentator for News Nation. So take the listener inside what it's like there at the big production. You know, I've been there and had to work it from a campaign side, but you were there as a commentator. How's that go? What's that all like?
Well, first of all, it hurt my heart a little bit to go to Tuscaloosa, you know, because I went to Ole Miss. They're one of our big rivals in the SEC West.
It's kind of a one-sided relationship.
It's fairly one-sided. We had a couple wins in a row the last few years, and then, you know, we've been close a few other times. But, you know, that place is so impressive from a college football standpoint. I don't even want to go. I mean, they're elite, to say the least. Yeah, that stadium is so ridiculous. If no one's ever – anyone listening to this haven't seen their stadium lit up at night when they're playing a game there, the four Jumbotron, it's worth looking into. It's something else, but I digress. It was interesting. Just from a production standpoint, News Nation did it. Kind of an upstart group. They've taken a lot of top talent from other places like Fox, like ABC, like CNN. What was interesting was, and I won't use names here, but I went into the spin room, which is where all the media sit and type at their computers and their TVs everywhere, and they wait for the candidates or the surrogates to come through, and they ask them questions about how their candidate did. Tim and I know this very well. Sonny, you know this very well. And Debate nights, if you're not on a campaign, as Tim and I have said, are a lot of fun. If you're on a campaign, not so much. It's a lot of work. So I was just there as a, you know, a spectator and then a commentator. So what was fascinating to me backstage, in the spin room.
Spectator, in that you were not attached to any of the candidates.
I'm not attached to a candidate. Right.
Yeah.
Officially or otherwise. So I'm looking out across the room and I thought, man, this seems very familiar. It's like a Fox News debate. And then out of the corner of my eye, I see someone walk across in front of me, comes up, gives me a big hug and a handshake. Someone who worked at Fox. Then I saw somebody else come by, also a higher tier person from Fox from years ago. Then a third person comes by who ran all the debates for Fox, who now is at News Nation. I was like, ah, yes, a piece of the puzzle has fallen into place. Now I see how they've been able to pull this off in just a couple of years of existence, because they hired people who knew what they were doing and said, here are the keys, get it done. So from that aspect, it was interesting. The debate itself, it was more the same. It's a primetime debate, primetime topics, primetime audience, but the primetime candidate isn't there.
Right.
It's hard to gain ground on somebody swinging at a vapor, at a ghost. He wasn't there. Trump is so far ahead, and there's a reason for him to go. So it was a lot of the same thing, bickering amongst each other to see who could be in second place, and if for some wild fantasy, some implausible action of Trump being taken out by the FBI case or DOJ coming after him or some legal thing, they're just fighting for number two. Yeah. And it's very obvious up on that stage. And we can break that down. I know you have some clips, Tim.
Yeah.
But one thing I'll say, this is a Megyn Kelly comment. So if you have that clip, be ready, because I'm going to say.
I have a couple.
What was fascinating to me was her question to each candidate at the beginning. Yeah. It was a long, drawn out, boom, 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 boom. Here's what's wrong. Answer for this. In summary, what she could have just said is, you suck, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're
right.
The next person, you're pretty awful, right? Even more so than the other person, right? Like, that was kind of the summary of the setup. It was like, here's all that's wrong with your campaign, all that you've done wrong. I mean, it's not working, is it? It was kind of a fascinating exercise in.
Yeah. You know, so let me play. This is the first one. And Sonny, coming out of this soundbite, let me get your reaction to it. This is right off the top, right? So now, first of all, we know that this is the fourth Republican debate. The audience, the rated audience, has gone down for each one of them. I think there were fewer than five million viewers for this one. And it's the lowest. Each one has gotten lower and lower and lower. So the audience attention span for each one of it, if it was 2 hours long, right? So you got to figure the audience is getting smaller and the audience of this individual show is probably front loaded. So more people are watching in the first few minutes. And then I imagine there's a really rapid drop off because who's going to manage to watch 2 hours of this, right? Because it really, at this point, it doesn't seem like it matters. So this is the very first question to any candidate. And it goes to Ron DeSantis. And this is exactly what you're talking about, Hogan. This is Megyn Kelly. And this is the windup of her question to Ron DeSantis.
Governor DeSantis, your campaign and its super PAC have spent the most money, had the most high net worth donors, and had a wave of momentum coming into this race after your big re-election win in Florida. You were seen by many as the candidate most likely to consolidate the non-Trump field. But here we are, a month out from the first real votes, and you haven't managed to do it. In fact, Nikki Haley is beating you in New Hampshire and South Carolina now, and closing in on you in Iowa, not to mention Trump, who is not only dominating in the early states, but is beating you in Florida by over 30 points. Is it fair to say, as Senator Tim Scott did when he dropped out, that voters are telling you, not no, but not now?
So that I thought was a great line that Tim Scott had when he withdrew, saying they're not telling me no, they're just saying not now.
Yeah.
But that's not, man, oh man, right out of the gate. That's the question. That's a haymaker.
You can just see his face just start to fall too. Hogan hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, you suck, right? Because that's exactly how she lined it up. I mean, I thought she did a great job moderating it and trying to keep them in check as they're bickering back and forth. But yeah, I mean, she's saying, you know, when this started, everybody thought that you were going to be the guy yeah. that everyone was going to rally behind, but that just hasn't happened. And I want to say too, I want to go back a little bit and talk about, I watched some pre-coverage on News Nation. I never really watched News Nation before, but about 2 hours before the debate started, I was watching their pre-coverage, and they had Chris Cuomo, they had Sean Spicer, they had Mick Mulvaney and a couple other people. And I thought they had a great range and coverage of different voices that we're going to be talking about. You had your really conservatives and you had your really liberals to dissect the debate. And I really liked that they did that. I think News Nation might be up and coming, but yeah, Megyn Kelly, she was tough.
It reminded you.
Did you see Jay Hogan Gidley on the air?
I did not. Hogan, I'm sorry. Were you on the panel?
I was in the spin room with Leland Vittert. So I did. Yeah. I was on a different side. They were outside in the cold, and Spicer was most upset.
You were inside and Spicer.
Oh yeah, I was inside. Yeah.
That's fine.
I have contract stipulations, Tim, that specify my. No, I'll go outside, guys. I mean, you know, whatever.
That's in your contract. That's in your.
I don't care. They're like, no, you're inside.
I missed you. I must have been tending to my trial.
It was as insightful of
priorities, Sonny.
Of things, Sonny. The most insightful of commentary I would imagine you've ever heard in your life.
That is true.
I would not have been able to think of the things I came up with. I promise.
I'll have to go back and look at it then.
Yeah, we'll have to watch that again.
Yeah.
So I know Leland Vittert, good from his Fox days, good guy. I like Chris Cuomo too. I know I had a run in with him on his show during the Trump campaign, which got a little bit of attention. But I think I liked going on with Chris Cuomo because I think he gets it. He understands that I was there, that political people come on to do a job. Mm-hmm. He's doing his job as, you know, sort of the adversarial interviewer. And I get it. I sort of respect that. I don't think he takes it personally. Some other people at some other shows on the network where Chris Cuomo used to work, and maybe at MSNBC, those people take it more personally, you know. Sure. And it's not like they don't understand what everyone's role is, and they were all just filling, you know. And you know what I mean? Like, I hate to use the phrase, they don't get the game, because it's not a game and we all take it very seriously, but you know, everybody has a role to play.
Yeah.
And when a host is like personally offended by the politics of stuff, it's just like, you know, come on, man, this is,
and they're having you on the show.
Yeah, this is work. This is business. Yeah. This is what we do. Don't act like somebody is coming in and, you know, poisoned your dog or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you take it so personally. Breonna Keeler is one from CNN who just takes everything so personally. She just hates you. You can tell, you know. But so the whole thing degenerated. I'm not going to play this whole thing, but here's Chris Christie and Vivek Ramaswamy. What's your take on this, Hogan, after we hear it?
Let me tell you something. That's no
reason.
That's
reasonable. Not my deal.
Yes, it's exactly what you said. You do this at every debate.
I'll tell you exactly what I'm saying.
I didn't interrupt you. Okay? You say this.
You
do this. You do this at every debate. You go out on the stump and you say something. All of us see it on video. We confront you out on the debate stage. You say you didn't say it, and then you back away. And I want to say
what? I'll tell you exactly what I said, Chris.
I'm not done yet.
Well, this is.
Now look.
This is nonsense. This man is spewing.
This is the fourth debate that you would be voted in the first 20 minutes as the most obnoxious blowhard in America. So shut up for a little while.
Sonny is cracking up. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I love Vivek has like a Dikembe Mutombo length finger.
Not today.
Maybe like, he does that little point. It's so good. Let me talk about Chris Christie for a second. So one of the most adept debaters and politicians on that stage, without a doubt, he has gone from the Chris Christie we know, the bawdy, tough, like I'm going to beat you in the face type politician, to the last debate where he was like, look, can't we all just get along? Like, no one wants to. Let's just focus on Biden, right?
Yeah.
His whole shtick is being that aggressive, tough, bare-knuckle brawler. So I was like, that's not Chris Christie. So I was glad to see the real Chris Christie return for this debate. I will bring up a point, though, I don't think I heard many people talking about. And I'm not saying because it was a smart point. It was just something I couldn't believe people didn't make the connection. We've talked about on here before, one of the most successful murder suicides in political history was when Chris Christie said to Marco Rubio on a debate stage back in 2016, This is what you do, Marco. You give me a few platitudes about an issue, and then you pivot to Obama. Like, that's all you do. It goes back to Rubio, and Rubio says, look, you know, I don't remember what the topic was, but yeah, we got to lower taxes. We have to pay, let us keep more of our money. But Obama is, and Chris Christie's like, see? Like, he's not answering your question, you know? Mm-hmm. He did that to Ron DeSantis three times, in which he said, Megan,
yeah, that was effective.
He did not answer the question. Your answer was straightforward and clear. He did it on sending troops to Taiwan, troops to Israel or somewhere like that, somewhere else. And he goes, you're not answering the question. You do this flowery speak. You don't answer it. And then you pivot on to something else. And then they go back to DeSantis, and he did it. He did the exact same thing Chris Christie said he had done. And Chris Christie's like, I give you what I just said, Ron DeSantis, everybody. It was very effective, I thought, because Christie has a history of doing it, and it happens in real time. But the other shouting matches between Vivek and Nikki and Ron and Christie and everybody else kind of overshadowed it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was the format or what, but I thought that was a really poignant moment for anybody out there who goes, wait a minute. Anybody who caught that was like, hold on. He did do that, right? He didn't answer the question. He refused to take the bait. He didn't, you know, come forward and he wasn't clean with the American people. And I think that's a problem for him.
Before we move on from Chris Christie, can I say that he was giving big Kamala Harris vibes with his I'm speaking?
Oh, yeah.
Remember with her.
Very good point.
To that's Instagram. Fair.
Very good point.
And two, I'm stealing this from Kalen because he tweeted about it, but I had the thought myself before I saw his tweet. Chris Christie leaning on his podium the entire time.
Baller.
I'm like,
I liked it.
And that guy is just hanging out.
I'm just cool, man. Watch this. It was kind of a little lean in. Like, I'm just going to sit here and be the skunk at the garden party. Watch it. Yeah.
You know, he made a really good point, I thought, at one point where he was, you know, it was before he defended Nikki Haley's honor and intelligence and all that stuff, which he did because she was constantly under. It showed that she's among that group, that group of four on the stage think that she is the one who's pulling ahead of them.
Sure,
anyway,
sure.
She gets attacked all the time. But Christie made the point that he goes, look at these three over here next to me. They're debating. They're treating this here like we're trying to decide which one of us is going to be the Republican nominee for president. That's not what we're figuring out here tonight because the guy who's winning, the guy who is way, way, way ahead is not even here.
Yeah.
So these people on the stage acting like we're making the big decision about who the GOP nominee is going to be. They're way off. That's not what we're deciding here.
And that was the third issue, by the way, he got Ron DeSantis on. Is he fit for office or not? And Ron DeSantis would talk around it. Now, the reason he has to talk around, it's obvious, because if he attacks Donald Trump in the way he wants to, he alienates all of Donald Trump's voters. So he can't do that.
Oh, it's a heck of a spot for anybody to be in. Yeah.
All of them can't do that, right?
From the very beginning, Donald Trump, well, now he's got, you know, 65-ish% of the vote, according to these primary polls. But the whole time they've been trying to figure out how to attract his voters without alienating them. And you really can't peel off a guy's voters without attacking him or his record or something.
Yes.
At the same time, everyone knows that Trump voters are fiercely, fiercely loyal to him as a candidate, like no candidate in history that I've seen.
Sure.
And so how do you do that? How do you thread that needle? How do you get people to come to you from him without attacking him and making them all?
You can't. And a reporter came up to me at the beginning because they saw me there, but they knew I wasn't with any campaign. And one guy, though, came up to me and goes, just put a microphone on my little tape recorder on my face and said, hey, any prediction you can give me early on, like a 15, 20-second prediction of what's going to happen? And I just leaned in and I went, Trump won. And I walked off.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean,
and the more these people debate and the more it descends into this shouting match, the smarter I think Donald Trump is, the wiser I think he is to go,
there's no question.
Okay, I'm going to go do a thing in Iowa, whatever. I'm going to go do some rallies. I'm going to do some town halls. And I'll see you guys in January when I clean your clocks.
And now we have two more debates coming up.
Yeah.
On CNN.
Why? What? It's going to be more of the same.
Newsmax or something. Yeah. Weird.
And like you said, Tim, the viewership has gone down. I think I saw a tweet yesterday that said the first one had like 14 million. And then the News Nation one estimated around 3.5 million.
Oh, 3.5. Okay. So it's even
I mean, we're going to be less than a million come. I mean, no one even watches CNN. So
yeah,
we're going to be under a million pretty soon.
We should say, do you guys want to just come do this podcast?
Yeah, exactly.
We should.
Invite them on.
How baller would that be if we got them to do a debate on our
podcast? Well, it would. You know, I have asked in the past some Ron DeSantis people come on, but that was blocked by somebody who worked at the Super PAC, who actually doesn't work there anymore. So maybe we should try again.
Try again.
You never know.
You know, it was what it was that we all expected it would be, which is it was a weird way. That was a Kamala Harris statement I just made. It was what it was, what we all expected it would be.
Yeah.
Time moves through time.
A debate is a televised debate is a time to go on television to debate issues. And these are issues that should be debated. And that's why we debate.
On television.
On television. That's exactly how she talks.
It's unbelievable. But, you know, it was a fun time. You know, obviously getting to see a lot of folks, you know, Tim, we've all worked with for a decade, not you, Sonny,
I'm sure it was fun.
A decade in this business. But it was, you know, it's funny to talk to people behind the scenes and kind of get their gauge of what they think about. And then, you know, kind of what they say publicly is always kind of funny to me. But still, look, they were there. And I think a lot of people saw what was happening. A lot of networks did not send some of their more well-known or top-tier reporters or talent for a myriad of reasons, I'm sure. But I think they're kind of gearing up for what happens. I do think
there's a lot of Georgia fans probably just decided. didn't want to go.
I don't understand though. First, real quick, just I hate doing the if game, but we're doing ifs as it relates to this campaign. If DeSantis doesn't win Iowa, his path is almost assuredly done because he put all of his eggs in that basket. He's not going to win New Hampshire. New Hampshire is the least churched state in the country.
Is it really?
It is. He's not going to win.
Least churched?
Yes, by every measurable data and metric.
There are fewest number of churches per capita.
I don't know the fewest number, the fewest people that attend church. Okay? Oh. No, it's per capita what it is. But either way, he's not going to win there because it's going to be a Christie-Nikki fight for second because Trump's going to win there.
Trump still wins. Yeah.
Trump still wins South Carolina.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Even over Nikki. So so he'd be 0-3.
And then Nevada is next.
He's not going to win Nevada. Right. By then, you're 0-3. I'm just telling you the way the news cycle works, everybody listening out there, DeSantis fans, understand. That's not the way the news cycle works. You're 0-3, you're done. They're not going to write about you in a positive way unless you win a state, and that's going to be hard for you to do after that point. If he finishes third behind Nikki in Iowa, which I don't think is going to happen, I think he ends his campaign that night. I think he's like, all right, that's the end
of it. Also, you know, hasn't the calendar been stretched out a little bit further that there's greater distance between when Iowa happens and when South Carolina happens?
Yeah, there's like two or three weeks from New Hampshire to South Carolina. So it's been stretched out.
Yeah. And that is a long way. You know, running a presidential campaign costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if you add 2 weeks to the calendar where you got to keep your campaign sustained and running, that's a lot of money.
Now, you told me DeSantis' team is confident they're going to win Iowa because they have a turnout from Kim Reynolds, and they have a good turnout apparatus from Bob Vanderplatz, both of whom I know Bob really well. I don't know Kim all that well. But, and look, again, full disclosure, I work for Huckabee. I work for Santorum. They won Iowa, and no one even thought they could or would. So it's a squirrely little place as far as polling and everything goes. I get that. But you didn't have a former president in the race then. We've talked about this before. But Nikki's path, I think, is also treacherous because she won't win Iowa. She won't win New Hampshire, even though she may be a strong second. She maybe comes in second in South Carolina because it's her home state. Mm-hmm. And she would come in second in South Carolina. So that gives her some longevity for another couple of states. But let's just say Christie drops out of New Hampshire. I'm doing a lot of ifs here, and I hate doing that. If Christie drops out after New Hampshire and DeSantis drops out after South Carolina, Nikki's in the race. Who's she going to debate?
Good point.
I mean,
someone's going to show up and debate her.
Let's find out what Gavin Newsom's doing.
Yeah.
You know, I guess. Roll that guy out again. Why not?
Sorry, I just went on a tangent there.
It's no,
just,
no, that's okay.
Playing it out is weird because I don't know where it goes.
And yeah, on top of that, I mean, who'd have thought? I think you're probably right that it is just as likely that Nikki Haley is the last non-Trump candidate standing.
Yes.
And if you had said that 3-4 months ago, that Nikki Haley had the potential to outlast Ron DeSantis, people would have thought, what are you talking about? Something weird, crazy happened. Right. And
because South Carolina's her Waterloo, right? Seven out of the last 12 nominees have won Iowa, but 11 out of the last 12 have won South Carolina. So South Carolina, we used to say when I was ED of the party, we pick presidents. You went other field.
Well, it's that part of the race. It's that part of the race too. Now, you know, after you get the first two behind you, that's when the race starts to mature. You know, like going into Iowa in a typical time where there's not someone who's sort of in the role as the incumbent, which Trump is really because he's a former president. But if there's no incumbent going into Iowa, everything, all the balls are in the air and you really don't know how it's going to work out because it is a strange place. It's difficult to poll. And so, but this time it's different. And when you get to South Carolina in a typical year, the polling has matured and you figure out, and then by that point, whoever wins South Carolina, odds on, there's a good chance that person is going to hang on and then gradually, you know, pick up momentum. And then as the all the other primaries come around, you start to win them in bunches. Time, I mean, you know, this has been covered for months and months, but Trump's been in the driver's seat the whole way. So it's not the same. So it's a matter of, it's a matter of the interest here, I think, is which one of these in this second group of candidates who lasts the longest. And I still don't
Vivek
think anybody
may.
I was about to say, how about
he
Vivek?
He has own money. He may just say, I'm just going to keep doing this till I get a show or a podcast or something. Who knows? Right?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know. Well, he's making everybody mad along the way. That's for sure. Annoying a lot of people. All right. So that's a lot of stuff that we've covered. I'd hope to get to some other things, but we're going pretty long here.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Hogan's fired up today.
I know. Hogan. We didn't even get to talk about the embarrassing Ivy League college presidents and their testimony. And
oh my gosh.
Where
these people are disgusting.
Let me before we go. This is the president of the University of Pennsylvania. Are you ready? And Elise Stefanik questioning these witnesses. And the question is: does calling for genocide against Jewish students on campus, does that violate your school's code of conduct?
Ms. McGill at Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment. Yes.
I am asking specifically calling for the genocide of Jews. Does that constitute bullying or harassment?
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
It's a context-dependent decision. That's your testimony today. Calling for the genocide of Jews is depending upon the context. That is not bullying or harassment. This is the easiest question to answer. Yes, Ms. McGill.
That's amazing.
Unreal. First, and she's smiling while she's answering.
Yeah, sure.
First, calling for the genocide, which is a fancy way of saying murder, calling for the murder of anyone who is Jewish is not harassment unless it's put into action, unless it becomes conduct. So at the University of Pennsylvania, as long as you don't actually engage in the act of, you know, killing people, then it's okay.
Well, there's also a difference here between freedom of speech just in general society and speech code and conduct codes on college campuses, which are different. If you're on a college campus and you were say, I want the genocide of all gay people, I want the genocide of all black people, I want the genocide of all transgender people, you'd be off that campus before you could finish the end of the next sentence. You'd be kicked off. You'd be made a social media pariah. You'd never work again. And by the way, you shouldn't. For whatever reason, this is a extreme national controversy. But for whatever reason, again, it's like the Jews are the exception. And for whatever reason from that, these colleges and universities continue to allow this to occur as if they're going to find some safe haven and protection because, for whatever reason, I'll say again, the left has given them that home for that mentality for that ideology for far too long, and now it's exposed.
Yeah. Whatever happened to words are violence, right?
Right.
That's what the campus activists all the time.
Silence is violence is what I was told.
Silence is violence. Silence is complicity, the whole bit. Words are violence and blah, 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 blah. But hey, no.
At least she put out a statement afterwards. Don't worry. She tried to bring it up with this video.
Well, just because their public relations firm that Penn has on retainer came in and said, you can't do that.
You probably shouldn't say
calling for genocide against the Jewish people.
Probably not gonna.
Does not depend on context. Yeah. It does not.
Yep. And by the way, that's the context. What context? That's the context. What do you mean?
What further? That's exactly it. What further context do you need? Yeah. What somebody, in what context would that be all right? I would have rather.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the context. Okay. Then you give me a for instance where that would be.
That's
all
a
right.
great question. Yep.
You mm-hmm. know. She you can't need to, come up
Tim,
with one.
Tim
no
for
way.
Congress.
Yes. Tim, no. We'll work for your campaign.
We would for free. Yeah. Yeah. I would, for free, you know what, Tim.
Me too.
Well, I would I would be afraid that I would win with your and I don't want that. And no one wants that. No one wants me in Congress, and I don't want to be. I remember
two, I got two people who do.
That's right.
Well, that's not you can't vote for me anyway. You're out of district.
Do you even know the rules of voting? I've been doing elections. I could vote for you five times from my apartment in D.C.
Well, that's true. But I don't even live there. I live in Virginia. But that reminds me of my old boss, Congressman Lou Barletta, former Congressman Lou Barletta from Pennsylvania. When he first got to Congress, he was mayor of his small town, Hazleton, and he got to Congress. And he used to say, I looked around and I looked at being in Congress and these fancy marble hallways and all that stuff. And I said to myself, how did I get here? What am I doing here? And then after a couple of weeks, I looked around at all my colleagues and I thought to myself, what are they doing here?
That's a great good. Line.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty funny. So lots of suspect people roaming those halls, me included at one time or another. Anyway, I didn't mean to get straight into that, but I couldn't. I wanted to talk about that. The Penn, Harvard, and MIT, just disgusting. Embarrassing. And, who would have ever thought you could say this thing and have it be true? But, boy, it was really a hard week to be the president of an Ivy League school. That's rough duty. All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate your time. As always, Sonny Joy Nelson, Hogan Gidley, welcome back from the debate in Tuscaloosa. Sorry about Crimson Tide being better than everybody.
I'm not.
Including Ole Miss. I'm not an Alabama fan. But my brother-in-law
just real quick before we close, my Uber driver was obviously a Bama fan. We were talking about Ole Miss and Alabama, and I love Alabama because I respect what they've done.
Sure.
And I told somebody, I said, back in the past, I would argue. I said, maybe I should just be an Alabama fan. They're like, no, you went to Ole Miss. How could you? I said, you can't break up with Ole Miss. You can't go to Alabama. I said, when you were dating a girl who's horrible, do you stay with them or do you go, you know what?
It's
I want
true,
to break
Hogan.
Up for a girl who won't break my heart. So I'll break
That's
up
right.
break up with Ole Miss and go Alabama all day. It's nothing but wins. Nothing
Fair
but
enough. You know, who's a big Alabama fan. And I'm sure you know Caitlin Collins is you're aware of this.
She will text me on the night of a game to mess with me, like an Ole Miss game.
Oh, when they're playing Ole Miss.
No, it doesn't have to be Alabama. Yeah. It'll be anybody. She'll say something.
She just picks on Ole Miss.
But Ole Miss is solidly in third place in the SEC behind Georgia, who's miles ahead, and Alabama, who are miles ahead. But we, we've had the best record in the conference the last 3 years, 2 10-win seasons. And next year with the playoff going to 12, we would have been in it the last 3 years. I mean, what else are you going with nothing, right? Do a lot with a little. So
you sound a little defensive.
Plug. That's my plug for Ole Miss.
You sound howdy, defensive. Howdy.
I'm not.
Okay. All right, guys. Sonny is checking her watch. We got it. Thanks very much. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.